Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere, on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/Twit to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/Twit. And by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/knowhow. That's LYNDA.com/knowhow. Today, you'll know how to pick a podcasting camera and then how to get a Raspberry Pi fully contained in a NES. Oh, if you're watching the drop cams. It's actually wide this time. Hey, welcome to Know How. This is Twit's How To program. I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Father Robert Ballasair.
And today, I'm winded because doing a lap. If you're watching this thing live, you see the wide shot. I'm running around like an idiot. Which is why Padre's got the first project we're looking at. As I catch my breath, you're going to look at podcasting cameras from like low budget to super high budget. And then we're going to go into our Nintendo thing second.
Absolutely. So, Ayaz, a while back, we looked at microphones for your podcasting studio. So we want to continue that to look at the cameras that maybe you might get for your first podcast setup. Now, there are a couple of steps here that you really should look at. The first is to consider what's the format of your show. And how much do you have to spend? I mean, let's be honest here. You don't want to be dreaming about that $10,000 camera if you know in your heart of hearts you've only got $500 to spend. So let's look through what we've got here on the table. This is a really nice, cornucopia of cameras in different price ranges with different capabilities. Of course, we've got these. These are the USB cameras. You'd be using this if you want to do, like, live streaming. Let's say you want to do a gaming show and you want to be able to show yourself while you're playing. These are sub-100. You go up from that and you get this. This is a GoPro. These have become very popular because they provide relatively high quality at a price under $300. That's not bad. Now, when we move from this, we start looking at sub-$1,000 cameras. And that's when I would look at a model like this. This one has been with me for a while. This is a Canon M400. Now, there's a couple of special features on this that we're going to take a look at later that will kind of make you decide exactly what kind of camera you want in the sub-$1,000 range. But as you move up from $1,000, you get to the big ones. These are the two cameras that I have with me most often. This is a Panasonic AGHMC40. This is pretty much a prosumer camera. It gives you a lot of the high-end features, but at about $1,600, which is not bad at all, considering exactly what you get in it. And then the big daddy. This is what I use whenever I go to a con. This is a Panasonic AGHMC150. This is the actual unit that I use whenever I cover Maker or CES. The nice thing about this is that it's full-featured. It is really, really high quality. So, I mean, it competes with the best of them, with the $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 cameras. And it uses a format that's friendlier to PCs. So this is what we're looking at.
All right, so we've got a bunch of different options here. Like you're talking about, you got to think about your production ahead of time. If you're going to be doing a lot of live streaming, it makes very little sense to have a camera this size that you're trying to run through a bunch of adapters into your PC and then streaming. If you're going to be doing a lot of work, I always suggest getting the cheapest camera you can. Do the content. If you're going to do it week in, week out, then you can decide to upgrade over time, because if you invest in this thing and you do 6 episodes of your program, you got a great camera for home movies, but maybe not the best idea.
Exactly. And I think that's a problem that I see with a lot of beginning podcasters. And that is, they think, oh, I'm going to shoot a movie. You're not shooting a movie. You're shooting a podcast. So again, think about what you're going to do. If you're not really doing any post-production, go ahead and get yourself one of these $100 cameras. These actually work really, really well, and you're not going to break the bank. And then, as your podcast evolves, as you start getting sponsors, maybe you get a little bit of money in the bank, go ahead and splurge on a more expensive one.
One of the things you should know about really low-cost cameras, They work well with lots and lots and lots of light. Any camera that looks like this tiny, cheap $50 camera always looks way better when you have lots of light. Think about that if you're thinking about your budget, where you want to put the money. Because if you've got a good camera, it can make up for low light. But if you have a lousy camera, you better have lights on you because it's going to be terrible.
And that's exactly what we're going to talk about next, which is know your sensor. That first part was know your format and know your budget. This is know the sensor. If you are shooting in a low light environment, the problem with some of those cheaper cameras, as Aya said, is that they're using CMOS technology, which is great. It's gotten a lot better than it was back in the day, but it's not as sensitive to low light conditions. There's a bunch of software tricks that they do to make it look better, but you add noise, you add a little bit of grain, and the color is always off. And so the cheaper cameras are almost always CMOS.
Now, again, when you see those videos and you see those little things dancing on people's faces, it's because the camera's trying to correct for all the lighting inconsistencies. So again, back to the lighting, but that's why you want to keep moving along.
Right. And that's why, look, if we look at the lineup of cameras, these are typically CMOS sensors. Then you go to the GoPro, which is a nicer CMOS sensor. Then you go to the $1,000 camera, which is typically a full frame CMOS sensor. So it's bigger, but it's still CMOS. You go to this camera, which is what's called a 3MOS camera. There's 3 CMOS sensors in there, one for red, one for blue, one for green. So it kind of makes up.
So it's competing against the 3CCD, which we'll talk about in a second.
Right, which is this big boy. This is 3CCDs. This is, you know, really what you want if you're shooting in low light, because CCD, the charge coupled device, is the most sensitive to low light. That means that this camera can pretty much go from the brightest shot ever to the darkest shot, down to like 0.01 lux. That's basically candlelight, and still get you a usable shot.
And these CCDs are larger than CMOS. That's why you'll see them in cameras like this, and that's why you'll see CMOS or see. How do you say it?
CMOS.
You say CMOS. I say CMOS. I think you said CMOS, whatever.
Yeah, CMOS, CMOS.
It's the same stuff, yeah. But the thing is that they're really small and compact, and that's why they fit in these small form factors. Have you seen small 3CCD?
I have. We actually use a couple of small CCD cameras here. They work well, but they still tend to be expensive. So large CCD camera, large format CCD or small format, they tend to be expensive.
Yeah. Right, so these cameras, though, if you want good video, you can have great video. Video is fantastic, but if your audio is crap, people don't watch you. Because if they just hear, if you sound like a drive-through, it ain't going to work. Or if you have that room echo, it's a real problem. What do we do with audio?
Yeah, audio. Thank you for bringing us to that. Because, again, like you know, so many videos on YouTube may have a decent camera. Like, especially the GoPros. They have decent cameras coming out of these little GoPros. But the audio was horrible because they're recording on the internal mic. Don't do that. Please don't do that. That means you're going to need a camera that has an audio input. Here we have on the overhead shot showing you the Canon, the sub 1000 camera. The reason why I picked this one instead of the others is because it has a little 3.5 millimeter jack here, which allows me to plug in an external audio source. Very important, because you want to be able to take that lav and actually put it on someone's shirt or have the handheld mic that you jam into someone's face.
Now, that there, though, uses a mini jack, not an XLR. XLR has usually better audio quality.
Right.
But you can get adapters. I think Beach Tech sells a bunch where you have a little mini jack to XLR adapter. You can attach it to that, and you can actually have much higher quality audio than you'd expect from a mini jack.
Right. And so, like, for example, with this, with the more expensive, the 3 CMOS, the 3 MOS cameras from Panasonic, again, this is the AG-HMC-40. This also has a 3.5 millimeter jack, but it has a breakout that goes right up here that gives you the XLR. Once you go up to the higher-end camera, again, here's my beautiful HMC-150, it actually has the XLR connectors integrated. And as you mentioned, it's higher quality because it's balanced, which means you're not going to have to worry about a lot of interference. It typically sounds, it's the best quality that you're going to get on a camera. And this is the reason why I don't go with a DSLR. I like having my audio integrated into the camera. I don't want to have to sync it later on. It's right on the track.
Yeah, one of the things with mini jacks, if you're going to use adapters, what happens is the more adapters you have, the worse your audio will get. You'll get more hits, you'll get more problems. So when they have it all built into one device, it's a lot easier. If you're going to use adapters, by the way, make sure they're as short as possible. I've always found an issue when you want to use a long adapter. You coil it up, bad idea. If you have a long run of mini jack wire instead of using an XLR cable, that will cause an issue. So if you're going to use an adapter with something like, actually, your smaller device here, your little Canon, do yourself a favor. Make sure you get small adapters, short runs, and then go long with XLR.
Right. Here's a few other things that you should consider. I'd like the size of the camera to be considered, because Look, this may take pretty good pictures. I mean, this is actually not a bad camera, especially if you hook up an external audio jack device to it. But walk into a booth at CES with this. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get a whole lot of respect. They think that you're just the little blogger or, you know, you're the guy who just wants to take photos. Now, walk into that same booth with one of these, and it's instant attention. They automatically think that you know what you're doing. They automatically think that you're representing a large outlet. So there's something to be said about having a camera that looks more professional.
I think you found a new niche kind of device, a case for these things to make them look larger. I think we should work on that as another know-how.
I like that.
How to build a case to make this look like a serious thing. Because back when I was a one-man blogging unit, I had the ridiculous-looking cameras. I had these little silly things. But if you can get quality content, if it's lit well, its audio is really good, and you have it turned up to the highest quality video, which we'll talk about in a second, people, when they watched at the end, they're like, hey, that looks really good. It's about the actual production part. What can we do? What can we expect when it comes to video quality from these different devices?
Right. So, of course, as you go up in price, you're going to go up in video quality. Now, I think the biggest thing that's going to differentiate is the AVCHD codec that it's using. All of these prosumer cameras are using AVCHD, which allows me to put high-quality HD video onto an SDHC card. This is a Class 10. Now, this is nice because it's small and AVCHD compresses a lot, so it doesn't use up that much space. In fact, on one of these devices, on this big device, I can get, 4 hours of footage on a 32 gigabyte card. That's at the maximum resolution. But a lot of people like P2, and we actually have some P2 devices here in the studio. The difference is P2 is crazy fast, but it's also crazy expensive. It uses that DVC Pro codec, not as compressed, which makes it easier for people using Macs to read. But at the same time, whereas a 32 gigabyte SDHC card might cost you $15 to $20, a 32 gigabyte P2 card is going to cost you $300.
That's why I've actually seen SDHC to P2 converters. So if you want to lower your cost, that's an option. I found them to be quite good, actually. So if you want to try that out, that's another way to go. But we're talking about, what about bit rates when we're talking about AVCHD? Because in the old days, when I first got my first Canon using SDHC, because it was right after my DV.
Right, your
DV tapes. Mm-hmm. It was like 17 megabits per second. It topped out then, and that just isn't as good as something like this.
Right. So this will actually go all the way down from 10 megabits per second, if you really want to save space, up to about 26 megabits per second. So the higher the bit rate, the more data it's going to capture, the better it's going to look. Now, let's do the corollary, and I want this to be the last point, and that is you need to consider what platform you're using to edit. If you're using Adobe Premiere on a Windows box, any of these cameras are going to work great for you. A little bit of a warning if you're using Apple, because if you're using Apple, AVCHD isn't quite natively supported. You can ProRes it, but then it becomes a huge file. Mm-hmm. It's a pain in the butt. So just know that. That's something to know before you plunk down a lot of money for your camera. Check out the reviews. Make sure that the people using your platform are comfortable with it.
Yeah, I've used AVCHD into Final Cut.
Yeah.
Going to be moving to another platform soon. But the thing is, with Final Cut, you do have to do the conversion, make it something that Final Cut can really work with. But it's where are you going to spend the money? Are you going to spend it on the camera, or are you going to spend it on the hard drive space? So there's always a compromise. And don't forget the added time of waiting for something to convert. It's really, really something to be aware of.
I think that to close it up, Ayaz, is to say you've got options. I think you really should break it down into this. Sub 100, sub 300, sub 1,000, sub 200, sub 2,000, sub 3,000. Pick something that's familiar with you. Pick something that's going to work for the way you edit. And that's going to be your podcasting camera, at least for the foreseeable future.
Well, let's take a break and thank our new sponsor on Know How, Hulu Plus. So, Padre, if you wouldn't mind just showing off Hulu Plus on my iPad
here.
Yes, I would. I'll talk a little bit about Hulu Plus. Now, you've probably heard of Hulu.com at this point. But now with Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. And they've got a selection of thousands of hit TV shows and a selection of quality movies on your TV or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. Right now, we're showing it on my iPad. One of the cool things about Hulu Plus, when you start watching a show on your iPad, you can get home to your Apple TV and it'll resume at that same point where you left off. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite TV shows like The Daily Show. I watch The Daily Show with this all the time. Bob's Burgers, a big fan of that. Modern Family. And everything is streamed in HD. So you're not just getting some like lousy video quality. HD 720p quality video. They also have some exclusive content, so you can check out Hulu originals like The Awesomes, starring SNL's Seth Meyers, and Moon Boy, starring Chris O'Dowd. You might know him better as Roy from the IT Crowd. That's an original series on Hulu. And Hulu Plus has a great selection of acclaimed films like the Criterion Collection. Lots of awesome movies there. For only $7.99 a month, you can stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, wherever you want. Now, I use Hulu Plus at home. I really love the idea that I never need to know when a show is on. It's always recorded. It's always there. It's like having a crazy huge cloud DVR. Big fan of that. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/twit. And that's a special offer for our audience. Make sure you use HuluPlus.com/twit so you get the extended free trial and they know we sent you. We thank Hulu Plus for their support of Twit. And we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Hulu Plus. And I've got my iPad. Ooh. They've also got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No.
Yeah, so I can watch that stuff.
I haven't watched any of that yet. They tell me I got to do it.
You can watch it in HD right now. Maybe we shouldn't do that right now.
No, let's wait till after.
Okay.
All right. Let's take a look at a quick tip.
I just received an email from John in Los Angeles who writes, Ayaz and Padre, I just received an invite to be part of a new podcast in Los Angeles. I have a Windows notebook with a decent setup, including a Logitech USB camera, an Audio Technica 2020 USB microphone, a lighting kit, and a few backdrops. However, I don't like how I look in Skype. Any tips for how I can look more natural when talking to a computer screen without buying more equipment? Well, John, that's a perfect topic for a quick tip. Now, if you've bought all that gear, and by the way, congratulations on being part of this new podcast, it means you've probably done all of the typical setups, but let me run through them. The first thing is you need to turn off all the automatic settings in the Logitech control panel. Now, I know Logitech does a really good job, but there is something jarring about having the focal length shift or the white balance change during a stream. So what you want to do is jump into the control panel. Once you have everything the way you want it during the broadcast, and I'm assuming that your lighting is not going to change, you're not lighting off the sun, go ahead and turn off the auto light, the auto focus, the auto right, basically anything that will automatically change the settings in the camera. Those are great when you're just trying to FaceTime with someone, when you're trying to Skype to a friend, but on a broadcast, it's not cool to have those parameters shifting during the live broadcast. But you're a pro, so you probably already knew that. Here's something you may not know, and that is you need to position the camera properly. Most of us, when we have a webcam, like this is a Logitech 920, we put it up on the top of the monitor or down at the bottom. Neither of those is acceptable. Up top, you look scared because it's always looking down at you. You're never quite looking at the screen. And then down below, you look up people's noses, and again, not a good look. Now, there are a couple of options. The best one would be to build a prompter. And actually, Ayaz showed us how to do that in Know How episode 29. But you said that you didn't want to buy anything else. You didn't want to make a whole lot of gear. You probably want to get this up and running. And so what I would suggest is a stick. That's right, a stick. Now, I have this. This is an IO mount that I had from a review a while back. It's just something I had around the office, but I could be using anything. You basically put your camera right on top of it. You mount it however you can. You put that in front of the screen that you're going to be doing your broadcast from, and then you position the camera so that you're looking straight into the lens when you're actually watching the Skype return feed. It's a fantastically simple solution that has great benefits. Really, you may wonder if that's going to block the screen, and yes, it will take up some of the screen real estate, but it's actually not that bad since what you want to do is to change that psychological need to look away from the camera all the time when you're trying to find the Skype feed. If it's right behind the camera, you'll always be focused on the lens, which means you're going to look more natural. I'm Father Robert Ballasar. I hope that helps. And this has been your quick tip.
You know, we've had a lot of Skype guests on Tech News Today and a bunch of folks and other shows where sometimes they have a laptop and the laptop's right here, and it's one of the most unflattering angles you could get. It's on somebody. If you always have a camera higher than you, it gives you a nice look, but when you're talking about Skype, you want to see somebody there, you have this natural tendency to look at the screen instead of the camera.
Right, and it's disconcerting because, well, what are you looking at? I mean, I'm over here, and you always forget, look straight into the lens if you're doing a Skype interview.
Yeah, Skype's fun like that. But I've actually seen this little two-way mirror that kind of sits on top of there that adds to... That's your setup, but
Your prompter project back in episode 29, that was perfect. I mean, if you just build that, that would be great, because then there's nothing in the way, and you get a nice little screen.
Yeah, you can see the person in reverse. But still, it's something better than that. And now, this Raspberry Pi project that Brian and I and Padre, this has been a team effort putting this whole thing together. We ran part one a couple of weeks ago. We'll have a link to that on twit.tv/KH. We've actually managed to cram all kinds of things in there.
Wait.
How did we actually do that? Should we show them how we did that, Brian? Sure. Let's go do that. So, Brian's brilliant plan is to somehow put a Raspberry Pi in this actual case. And we want to have the ports on the back. Now, obviously, there are some issues. We're looking at a networking jack here. This doesn't exactly line up with anything. So instead of trying to reuse these holes, which we really can't, we're going to have to make this larger. As this is an old piece of technology, this is a 1985 Nintendo piece, we didn't want to break it off the bat because, I'll be honest, I haven't worked with plastic very much when it comes to cutting things. I'm usually using wood. So if you look down and around, you will see a plethora of ideas or things that we're using to come up with a substitute and tests. All right, so this is a piece of plastic from a discarded hard drive, an enclosure. And I'm finding they seem to be pretty good. As you can see, all my cuts look like garbage. And we want a nice finished look to this. So we're trying to figure out how we can do this. Here's the first cut I did. You can see, wow, that would look really lovely on the back, right? I mean, it's Brian's house, so he's going to be seeing it all the time when he's looking behind his Nintendo. But we don't want it to look like this. We got a little bit better around here and over here. And what I figured was, why not try to use metal instead? You could see this hole here. You see it's squared off. Because first what I did was, I drilled a hole using a drill. Exciting. Next, I use this tool. What this device does, we'll find the official name soon. He calls it the nibbler. I don't know what it really is. But you can see this piece up here. When it clamps down, it actually makes a square hole. So if I go into this piece of metal, and I place it towards myself, and I cut, it continues to be square. So I should be able to notch out a nice looking hole if I wanted to do that. So the idea is to come up with a plate that will house this Cat5 cable receptacle, otherwise known as an Ethernet jack, smart guy. So something like this, you can see if I keep cutting away, I might actually have something. And also has to house our HDMI. So this is obviously not going to fit because we're trying to figure this out. What we'll do in theory is we will cut out the back of this and reuse this spot. The plate will sit behind it, kind of like that. So you'd have a plate there. Actually, it wouldn't be that far back, but you get the idea. That way we can do all of our modifications on the plate and then attach the plate to the Nintendo. It looks like somebody just chomped it. So that's the problem. This is ugly. I don't know if I want, you know, even though this is the back of your system, Brian. Brian's behind the camera if you guys don't realize that. I don't think I want this sitting back there. I think we're going to have to try a different approach. Okay, look, we really want this to be pretty, and that metal thing, I think if we spent hours and hours and hours, it might look really good. Then I realized something. Something popped out in my head. I'm like, wait a second. What if there was a thing I could just pop in here? And I'm like, it's called a keystone. Like down here. Now, if you look under this desk, you'll see a wall plate with, these have Ethernet keystones. Well, they are HDMI keystones and a Ethernet one. What we're going to do is get a wall plate, a couple of keystones, trim that wall plate down so we can fit it in here. We're still going to have to take a piece of plastic off, but it'll give us a nice, clean, finished look when we actually put this together. All right, so earlier today I took a wall plate and I obviously cut off parts of it to make this small enough to fit into this space. Now, what I found was the width of this, at least the ports, kind of line up almost exactly the same as this piece on the Nintendo. So what we're going to do is cut out a piece across this way, trying to use this opening as well. We want to make sure there's room around the HDMI cable for the actual cable. Also, there's going to be a networking port right here. We'll show you that in a minute. But what I want to do next is cut this piece out, and hopefully this will line up nicely. And shall we go ahead and sacrifice the Nintendo? First goggles, though, before I start cutting into it, because I don't want flying pieces of plastic. This part rubbed against it. I'm sorry, Brian. All right, so I've marred the surface here. Turns out that when I was using the Dremel tool, the actual collar of the device brushed up against the back of the Nintendo, making it a big, horrible gouge. I apologize, Brian, for your device, but I'm going to try to make this nice and neat to make it up to you. I don't know how to fix that, so sorry about it. This is how we learn. We only have one of these Nintendos. We've already mounted our USB ports here. Probably wanted to do that at the end if we were going to do this over again, but we were building it pretty much in place. So the fact that it worked and we wanted to keep testing it means that the order might not have been exactly the correct way to go, but it's working.
So for the USBs to fit into the case, we had to cut one of the pillars. Next, Ayaz was able to cut out a piece of wood with a little slat that we could use to hold it in place. We were able to hot glue the wood to the case of the NES, which gave the USBs the extra strength that they would need for if you were going to be plugging in and unplugging USB controllers to it. And we also got lucky with the USB hub that we ordered for the project, where when I took it out of the case, it had mounting holes that were perfectly aligned with the NES case holsters. The next thing we wanted to do was find a mounting place for the Raspberry Pi. I found some mounting holsters for the Raspberry Pi on Adafruit.com, and we were able to measure out three holes along the base of the NES. It took us a little while to get the Raspberry Pi into the holsters, but once it was in there, it was very secure. So while Ayaz was busy trying to figure out how to mount the plate to the back of the Raspberry Pi, me and Padre started working on the power switch for the NES. There's a website called Mosberry Circuits, and you find a shutdown switch for the Raspberry Pi. Now what you can do is solder the existing NES power switch to the Mosberry circuit, and what that allows you to do is send a script to the Raspberry Pi, which will shut it down safely rather than just a hard shutdown, which isn't good for the Pi. Once we had completed soldering the power and reset switch to the Mosberry circuit, the next step was to figure out how to get the LED, the existing LED, to work with the Raspberry Pi. So we had soldered a couple of wires to the actual LED on the board. We had to cut the connecting circuit to the reset switch. The reason I cut on the board here was so that the signal wouldn't be sent to the reset switch, also shorting out the Pi. And also, when we had first tried plugging in the Nintendo LED, it was yellow instead of red. So that meant that it was actually getting too much power from the Raspberry Pi, and we put a resistor in the line and connected it to the LED, which then fixed the problem and gave us the red light that we were hoping for.
Now that we've got the hole in the NES, what we want to do is modify the wall plate. We have this extension cord for our USB hub, and what we're going to do is have this part of it sticking out the back next to the HDMI. It's going to be seated right in the middle of our HDMI and our soon-to-be networking port. I've got a drill bit here. I'm also going to do a bit of countersinking, so this can be as flush as possible with the actual wall plate, and we'll work with our power adapter. It's almost like I know what I'm talking about, but I don't. Somewhere right around there. That's about right. And if it's screwed up, I mean, it's just Brian's anyway, right? Like, what's he going to do? Always, always wear your goggles. Because we've got plastic flying everywhere. All right, so we've punched down our keystone for networking. On the other end is an Ethernet cable, so we can attach that to the Raspberry Pi. I have a pretty long cable. That's because, from what I've read, and I'm sure you know-it-alls will know whether this is true or not, there's supposed to be a minimum length when it comes to Ethernet. It's supposed to be about a meter. Now, this is obviously ridiculously long. It should cover the meter and should be prevent crosstalk. That's why you want a long run here. We're just going to pop in our keystone and our jack here, and let's go. What's next? Let's line up some things. Now, last we left off, we had our wall plate. This was hours ago. I wish there was a clock behind me so you could see how many hours it's been. So here you can see the wall plate, and we've got a power cable really glued in there nicely, and we've got our HDMI keystone right there. There were issues with it. Hot glue was not going to hold that plate enough. And if you look right now, you're like, what the heck just happened? We've had to use screws because I marred the case. Brian gave me the go-ahead to get some screws into this so we could affix the wall plate. But there was an issue. As we would push HDMI cables or a Cat 5 cable, what would happen is the wall plate would move up. So what do? I went with wood because I found some wood around here, screwed it down, and what it does is it provides enough downward pressure. So every time I push, it moved up. We want to stop that. We'll put this back on. And I think Brian's going to put the rest of this back together because apart from this, I think the only thing left, the easy part, is putting it all back together, like putting the Raspberry Pi on its standoffs, hooking up the HDMI, and all that other fun stuff. That's coming up next.
So now I've got all the components back together, boot up the Raspberry Pi, and we've got ourselves an NES case MAME system with a Raspberry Pi inside of it. I wouldn't say it's as easy as Pi to make, but it was definitely a fun project. And if you've been looking for something cool to do with your Raspberry Pi, I highly suggest giving this project a shot.
Now you can tell Brian did a lot of work on this project as well. He put that piece together, a lot of editing, so he was loopy to the point where he made a terrible pie pun, but we love him anyway. What we're going to do for the back, I owe him something to make this clean. I'm going to add a little plaque made by KnowHow on a date, so that way I can cover up that gouge. Right here we've got the full-on device. Padre's playing a game. It's working great.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on here. If you're wondering, hey, again, what about the parts you used? What kind of USB hub is that? What about the reset switch? All these things will be available at twit.tv/KH. Full show notes. Best show notes
in the industry.
That for the show. Anyway, yeah. We're the ones who do it. We should take a quick break and thank our friends at lynda.com. You guys know lynda.com at this point. They're an online learning service, and they tell you or they teach you how to get these creative software and business skills to achieve your personal or your business goals. So if whatever you want to do, they've got a course for you. With a lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to a vast library of high-quality, current, and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects. So they've got lots of things. So if you want to mess with your hobbies, you know, a lot of that video was shot with the DSLR of the Nintendo Raspberry Pi. So if you want to know how to shoot video with that, they've got courses for that. If you want to figure out how to make your own web apps or do a CSS or other Raspberry Pi projects, they've got that at lynda.com. And myself, as I've mentioned before, I used to be a Final Cut Pro guy, and I'm trying to make the transition over to Premiere. So I've been taking their Premiere for Final Cut Pro users. It also helps with people who are avid users. So moving over to Premiere is what I'm learning to do. Tons and tons of information there. Playlists. I can skip around. If I kind of know how to do something, I can jump. I can bookmark things. They've got transcripts. So if I wanted to search for something, I can find that. Their new courses added all the time. This week, they've added OS X Mavericks, new features, financial literacy. So, you know, the stuff they never teach you in school, they've got that covered for you. Music studio setup and acoustics, and the Creative Spark with Michael Langan. Now, the instructors in these, by the way, are working professionals at the top of their fields and expert teachers. The video production is excellent. They're using state-of-the-art studios. You're not going to have that YouTube feel. Like we talked about earlier, Padre, with audio to sound like this. You don't get that at lynda.com. They've got fantastic stuff there. Courses for all experience levels that cover a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. And like I mentioned before, you can watch on your computer, tablet, or mobile device. You can switch and pick up on the chapters from where you left off. You learn at your own pace, on your own schedule. It's only $25 a month for access to Lynda's entire course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's project using the same assets they're using. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank lynda.com for their support of KnowHow.
That's a lot.
A lot of stuff.
That is a lot of stuff.
Where could people find our stuff again?
Well, you know, the first thing they're going to want to do is they're going to want to go to our show page, which is at twit.tv/KH. There you will find, I'm going to say it.
What are you going to say?
The best show notes in the industry.
Best show notes for KnowHow. I totally agree with you. We do a lot of work for this. So a lot of the, like we mentioned before, the projects, there's a huge library available there. You can download episodes, subscribe, get them whenever you want. If you want, and this happened a lot on Google+, we have a Google+ community. You can get sometimes sneak peeks at what we're doing. gplus.to/twitkh is our Google+ community. Almost 5,000 people. It's like 4,971 or something. I might be making that up.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of you guys in there, and they constantly, there's this great interactive conversation going on in public. Padre's always in there commenting. Last night, I was in there plus wanting things. Got some great show ideas here. Lots of folks interacting. And I think last week we showed a little bit of a sneak peek of our Nintendo Raspberry Pi. So there's always fun stuff you might find there.
It's like the bonus Easter egg type stuff.
Yeah.
Jump on in. You know, you can also find us out in the interwebs at our email address, which is knowhow@twit.tv. And if you're on the tweeters, they call it tweeters,
right?
They call it Twitter. Yeah, it's all the
Twitter,
cool
I think, is in their speakers.
Oh, Well, you know, I don't know any of that stuff.
The Twitter. There it is.
The Twitters, right. You can find him at IAS, me at PadreSJ, but you can write to us at #TwitKH.
Yeah, we got to save search. We're always taking a look at those things. Guys always have some fantastic show ideas available there. You mentioned our email address, but do you guys know there's a awesome survey you can fill out? Let us know at twit.tv/survey. You can let us know what you think about the programming we've had over the course of the year. We don't ask you guys to do this much, but it only takes a few minutes. Give it a look. And what are we doing next week?
Well, let's see. Next week, I believe we're doing fun with thermocouples. I'm going to show you how to make energy out of nothing.
Once you have that energy, I'm going to show you how to organize your Media Center collection, because I have a lot of DVDs that I need to work on, and it's going to be fun. I know I have that like dread, but when I did it, I didn't have the guide you guys will have next week. Also, if you guys are watching this live or sometime before the 15th, KnowHow's up for an award, and so is a lot of Twitch shows are, actually, at podcastawards.com. We're up for Best Produced. A ton of Twitch shows are nominated. Vote every day.
But we're the only Twitch show in the Best Produced category, so vote every day for KnowHow. Every day. No, seriously.
As much as you can.
As much as you can.
We would love that.
Please.
But yeah, anyway, so I think that pretty much does it for us.
I think so. I think we're done.
And now that you know how to do all this stuff, you know, you could actually set up your own Raspberry Pi and then make a podcast on it based on today's episode.
Whoa.
Go do it.
It's meta.